You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics, and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online at wdiy.org. That is especially for our listeners outside of the transmission area, or you can tell friends and family as well that they can tune in through the website and click listen online. I also want to mention that old shows are also available on WDIY.org or through yourfinancialchoices.com. I've been told some folks download the podcast and listen to them at their convenience, so that works out very well for folks. You can find a show topic that interests you and listen to it on your own time. So that's a great resource to have through WDIY.org. Today is May 28th, 2014. The markets were down slightly today. The Dow closing at 16,633, the NASDAQ at 4229, and the S&P at 1911. Last week, I talked about investment planning for every stage of your financial life. Tim Roof, who was a certified financial planner professional, was my guest, and I thank him for coming on the show. This week, we are talking about financial advisors, what they are and what they do, but also what different designations mean. So that came through as a question from one of our listeners, and I thought, you know what, it's been a while since I've talked about designations, and in fact, when I looked back in some of my old outlines, I couldn't even find it. So I think it's been a real while since I've talked about designations, and I think it's important for folks to understand them. And it helps you make better decisions as to where you would benefit from information when you're seeking financial advice, etc. So we'll talk about what those designations are. Next week, I thought I would do a show on listeners' questions. So as we go through tonight, if you're listening, if there's always been a question you've wanted to ask, you're maybe a little shy about it, you can either send it through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com, and I can read it on the air and answer it on the air next week. Or you can make sure that you set aside some time and listen to the show next week, and you can call in with your question and talk live on air just as you can tonight. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Judy Ann and she will bring it into the studio. Remember that when we take your calls, if you do decide to come on air, we want you to mute your radio so that you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. I want to give folks the phone number so you can jot that down for either tonight or next week. And the number is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. Or you can email questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. Also regarding those podcasts, I just want to mention that I did just finish up a series. It wasn't all in a row, but I want to mention that series was the financial planning elements as they apply to every stage of your financial life. So you can find podcasts on cash flow, insurance, retirement planning, estate planning, taxes. I think I really didn't do one on taxes only because I have done taxes throughout, you know, the past couple months. and investment planning. So we talked about each of those elements of financial planning as they applied to the various stages of your financial life, from the early stages, which I called testing, through the end stages, which I called divesting. So it's kind of interesting. So you can catch those on those podcast if you're interested. So again, tonight we're talking about financial, what is a financial advisor and what do all the designations mean? So I'm first going to go through all the different designations, and it might appear to be not quite that interesting of a subject, and maybe I, as the host, should not say such a thing, but I'm pretty honest here. I say what I think. But in the end, you know what I realized? It really actually is quite interesting when you see the different designations and what's required for each of these designations and what they mean. And so if you are more informed, again, that will help you find the people that will help you for whatever area you're working on. So let me start with the CFP certification. And I will try to give you the references of where I found this information, because sometimes you can Google this and, you know, find out what different designations are. Like, for example, I found an article on different designations on Investopedia. But I thought, I didn't know what the references the writer may have used, so I went on all the various websites to find this information. And in going to those various websites, there's lots of other information available for the consumer. So just as I quite often talk about government websites that have information for us, these professional websites also have information for the consumers as well, which you may benefit from. So the Certified Financial Planner website is cfp.net. That's cfp.net. And I'm just basically going to read to you what they say a Certified Financial Planner professional is, and they're particular about us saying certified financial planner professional. So they say, today more than ever, certified financial planner professionals are an essential resource, from budgeting to planning for retirement to saving for education to managing your taxes and your insurance coverage. Finances doesn't mean just one thing for most Americans, and financial planning means much more than just investing. Bringing all the pieces of your financial life together is a challenging task. So I was really happy to hear them say that, since that's what I try to also bring to our listeners as part of this show, educating you that it is about putting all those pieces together. They continue, although many professionals may call themselves financial planners, CFP professionals have completed extensive training and experience requirements and are held to rigorous ethical standards. They understand all the complexities of the changing financial climate and will make recommendations in your best interest. Now, I would just put a caveat on that. They say they understand all the complexities of the changing financial climate. You hope that, and you want that to be the case, and you hope with an organization that monitors this designation that they, through the exam, through the experience that they require, that is the case. So that's where you have that extra level of assurance, is when you have an authority, I guess I would say, monitoring the people who get these designations. There are strict requirements for this, and they call them the 4 E's. And this is where planners can differentiate themselves from someone who doesn't have this designation, although there are some other financial planning designations, which I'm going to talk about later in the show. But the rigorous requirements include these 4 E's, which they say are education, an examination, experience, and ethics. So when we come back from this first break, I'm going to talk about what those 4 E's are and explain why it makes a difference for someone who's doing financial planning if they have a certified financial planner designation or not? And then what would be included in some of the other designations that we might see or work with people? Okay, if you have questions, the phone number this evening is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And we will be back in
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have vinyl albums or 45s on your shelves that are taking up space and gathering dust? Why not donate them for a good cause? WDIY will receive profits from the records, and you will receive a tax deduction. For more information or to arrange for drop-off or pickup, call 610-694-8100 extension 3 or visit WDIY.org.
Thank you, Jeff. Welcome back, folks. You are listening to Your Financial Choices. I'm your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP. We are talking tonight about what is a financial advisor, and with that, what do all these designations mean? There's lots of designations out there. I think it's important for people to understand what they are in your decision making. And if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. You can ask questions live or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. And the if you ask off air, you can just give your question to Judy Ann. She's here in the studio and can answer your calls. And she will bring the question into the studio for me. So that number again is 610-758-8810. So we're talking about some of the designations. And then as I wrap those up toward, you know, later in the show, I then will talk about what is a financial advisor, what does a financial advisor do, and, you know, what that relationship will look like. So right now we're talking about the CFP certification, and the website for more information on that is cfp.net. And the certified financial planner professionals with that designation, they have to meet certain requirements, and the CFP board, who monitors the designees, has strict requirements. They're called the 4 E's: education, examination, experience, and ethics. So they say on their website, most people think all financial planners are certified, but this isn't true. Anyone can use the title financial planner, and I would say anyone, and this is me adding this, that anyone can say they are a financial advisor as well. I don't, you know, this isn't monitored from any one organization necessarily. So anyone can use the title financial planner. Only those who have fulfilled the certification and renewal requirements of CFP board can display the CFP certification trademarks, which represent a high level of competency, ethics, and professionalism. Because they're held to a fiduciary standard of care, and I'm going to talk about what that means in a minute, they're held to a fiduciary standard of care, a CFP professional is required to act in your best interest. That's what it means to be a fiduciary. So the education element, unlike many financial advisors, CFP professionals must develop their theoretical and practical knowledge by completing a comprehensive course of study at a college or university offering a financial planning curriculum approved by the CFP board. And I can talk about that in a minute. Applicants may also satisfy the education requirement. Here they're talking about it. Applicants may also satisfy the education requirement by submitting a transcript review or previous financial planning related coursework, or they can show that they have attained certain professional designations or academic degrees that cover the important subjects in CFP Board's financial planning curriculum. So the education, they have to either show that they've taken coursework in this financial planning curriculum or have previous financial planning related coursework, transcripts, or academic degrees or professional designations. So, for example, I already had the CFP, so I did not have to fulfill that education requirement, because by virtue of having the CFP CPA, I had demonstrated that I had much of that curriculum that they expect for the CFP program. So strict education requirements. In the past, CFPs did not have to have a four-year degree. And they changed that a few years ago, that you have to have a four-year degree as well now to get your CFP. We had a call come in off-air. Albert, thank you, Albert, for calling in. He says, my in-laws are getting up in age. They're from Europe and have real estate and investments overseas. What are the ramifications for us if they pass, and ways to prepare for tax purposes as a possible inheritor in the U.S.? This is a very big question, Albert, but also very interesting and a little complicated. Now, you say your in-laws are getting up in age. They are from Europe and have real estate investments overseas, but what you did not indicate on here is whether or not they live here now. There are complications, I would say, if they live here, if they're residents of the United States, then they may have to file an estate tax return if they're residents here of the United States, and you'd have to look at all of their real estate holdings and things like that. You may end up having some ramifications for that if they have property here as well. Albert, if there is a non-U.S. citizen here in the United States with property of more than $60,000 on like a second to die, you could have a federal estate tax issue. So that's not a lot of assets to have. And I have had folks who have U.S. property. I think it would need some more work with an estate planning attorney to capture whether or not any of the holdings overseas come into play on the estate tax return for a resident, a non-U.S. citizen resident. So that number is so small, Albert, that I think you should find a good estate attorney and get your in-laws to them to go talk about any ramifications. As far as you receiving inheritance, you may have to report if you've received gifts from them. If it's over $100,000, there's a special form that you filled out called a 3520. If you receive more than $100,000 from a foreign citizen. So if it's happening at death, then you need to follow or file any appropriate documents at that time. So the question is a little bit complicated for the show right now, but it definitely is something that you need to pursue with an attorney. And it's also a great question, and it's great that you're thinking about it, because at the end of every show, I say be proactive, not reactive. And it's much smarter for you to take this all into consideration now while everyone is living. If your in-laws are here, it may be time to consider why they're keeping property in Europe or overseas. And there's lots of Albert, this is a very interesting situation. There are lots of strategies and techniques that can be employed with gifting and also estate issues. Lots of important things going on there. So you definitely need to talk to someone sooner than later. Okay, I hope that helps and gave you enough information to help you, but it's quite a complicated subject and probably too much for the radio show right now. But thank you for calling. I appreciate that. If you do have questions, folks, you can call. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I just want to mention one last thing in regards to that kind of call. It's amazing how many people do live here in the United States that aren't citizens. They may have their green card, they may be permanent residents, and they don't realize the consequences of what will happen if they own property in the United States or have accounts here in the United States as a non-U.S. citizen. You definitely need to go talk to attorneys, because you may be subject to federal estate taxes at a very low asset value. If you're married, maybe your spouse is a U.S. resident or U.S. citizen. Maybe they're not. if they're a U.S. citizen and they're passing property to you, there are also complications. There are things you can employ called a qualified domestic trust, a QDOT, and sometimes it's easier for the non-U.S. citizen spouse to become a citizen. So you really need to weigh the issues there to see what might apply for you and what might be in your best interest, the family's best interest, and how you pass assets. Sometimes we find that people just haven't, you know, taken care of these things because they think it's so complicated, but it would be much more complicated if you don't do something about it while you can. Okay? So, Albert, great call, and I hope that if there are people out there listening that are not U.S. citizens, that you think about the consequences of that and go see an attorney. We will take another break, and we'll be back in just a minute. The phone number is 610-758-8810.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org.
And we are back. Folks, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And we are talking about what a financial advisor is, some of the designations that go along with it. And I reread Albert's question when we were on the break. And I just want to add one thing if Albert's still listening. Because what I assumed was that possibly the in-laws were living in the United States. If the in-laws are not in the United States, don't live in the United States, it's probably much less complicated, at least for you as a beneficiary, because then what would happen is they would just do whatever inheritance tax they may or may not have in Europe. You want to make sure they have their ducks in a row over there, and then basically you're receiving an inheritance. So from the standpoint here is you're not going to pay income tax here in the United States for receiving an inheritance. If that was the bottom line question, that I wouldn't anticipate would be a problem. You just make sure people do the proper reporting that they have to do from whatever country they're in, and there may not be any inheritance tax where they live. It depends. Okay, so that's simple enough. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We're talking about designations. So for the CFP, Certified Financial Planner Professionals, they meet rigorous standards, one of which was education. I already talked about that. And the other three, examination, experience, and ethics. There is an exam for the CFP professionals. They must pass the comprehensive certified exam, which tests their abilities to apply financial planning knowledge to real-life situations. Sure enough, they give case studies. The exam covers the financial planning process, tax planning, employee benefits and retirement planning, estate planning, investment management, and insurance. This comprehensive exam ensures that a CFP professional is highly qualified to develop a plan for your finances. So that is the expectation, folks. The Certified Financial Planner Boards has put out a financial planning process that is to be implemented in practice. And with that, advisors are to be looking at all of these different areas and how they apply to you when they're doing their planning. They also have an experience requirement. So CFP professionals complete several years of experience related to delivering financial planning services to clients prior to earning the right to use the CFP certification trademarks. This hands-on experience guarantees that CFP professionals have practical financial planning knowledge, so you can count on them to help you create a realistic financial plan that fits your individual needs. So not only do they have to have the education, they have to pass the exam, and then they have to have several years of experience. and they verify all of that before they convey the credentials on these professionals. And the fourth E is ethics. When it comes to ethics and professional responsibility, CFP professionals are held to the highest of standards as outlined in CFP Board's Standards of Professional Conduct. They are obliged to uphold the principles of integrity, objectivity, competence, fairness, confidentiality, professionalism, and diligence as outlined in CFP Board's Code of Ethics. The rules of conduct require CFP professionals to put your interests ahead of their own at all times and to provide their financial planning services as a fiduciary, acting in the best interest of their financial planning clients. CFP professionals are subject to CFP Board sanctions if they violate these standards. And in fact, now this is me talking, I think that the CFP Board came out with the ethics requirement for continuing education before the CPA licensing, at least in Pennsylvania, did. So the certified financial planner professionals have continuing education that they must do over their practice period. I think it's like 35 hours a year. They have to do their continuing education, and part of that requirement is ethics, and that has been required for a very long time, if not since the beginning. Whereas I know with the CPA, they started requiring ethics continuing education just recently for those of us who are licensed in Pennsylvania. So let me talk about CPA now. CPAs are certified public accountants. It's the statutory title of qualified accountants in the United States who've passed the Uniform Certified Public Accountant Examination and have met additional state education and experience requirements for membership in their respective professional accounting bodies and certification as a CPA. So the CFP, that was governed by the CFP Board, which kind of, kind of watches over all of those folks who have the CFP marks, whereas the certified public accountant, that's a license that is given through the state board of licensing. So you can look up CPAs in Pennsylvania by going to the Board of Licensing for Pennsylvania. So you can kind of Google that, you know, CPA licenses, Pennsylvania. It'll take you to a website. You can look up people's names. You can see how long they've been licensed, et cetera. And that is licensed at the state level. And the requirements for continuing education are also set out by that state licensing board. So the exam was traditionally a two-day exam, and in some jurisdictions, now it may be taken in individual parts. The experience requirement is typically the equivalent of 2 years of applicable employment, or if you have a master's, I think it's 1 year. In Pennsylvania, they just recently changed the education requirement, or excuse me, the experience requirement that young people who are now applying for their CPA, the experience does not have to include auditing. Back in the day, it always had to include auditing, and they no longer are including that. The only thing I would say about that is the wonderful skills you can pick up when you're doing auditing, because that teaches you to be investigative. It teaches you to question. It teaches you about materiality and sampling. So that's the only thing now I would say with the younger CPAs out of Pennsylvania. You're not having that auditing requirement, and I hope you're not missing out on some great experience that I really appreciated having. It feels a little boring when you're doing it, but it really is great experience and teaches you quite a bit about, searching for things. Kind of fun that way. So there are strict education requirements as well for CPAs, and it's over a 2-year reporting period, and it's typically about 80 hours. And I think that the continuing education requirement quite possibly for CPAs is more than some of the other designations, for sure, even maybe more than attorneys. I haven't looked that up, but I heard that at one point. So a website to find more information about CPAs is aicpa.org, and that's for the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. So that's aicpa.org. And they, too, had some consumer information there on their website, some, you know, tools, letters, articles. I did notice that it didn't seem quite up to date on some things that I clicked on, so that's a little unfortunate. But a lot of that information is applicable regardless of when it was published, so you could just kind of hunt around there for some, you know, free advice. So CPA, this is how they describe a CPA: a trusted expert who helps individuals and organizations envision and shape their financial future, characterized by commitment to objectivity, integrity, and competence, performance on behalf of clients, employers, and the public, and accountability for the highest professional and business ethics. So that's our definition of CPA. When we come back from our break, we'll go through more of these designations that it's important for you to know and understand. If you have questions, and they can be off topic, love questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Visit WDIY.org.
And we are back with your financial choices. This is your host, Lori Siebert. If you have questions this evening, the number is 610-758-8810 or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. I also want to mention that next week, the show is dedicated to listeners' questions. I'll pull questions that I have from prior shows, the ones that I can find. I think questions are always the most exciting part of the show. And call-in questions as well. So if you have questions next week, that's what the show will be about, listeners' questions. And the phone number next week, as well as for this evening, is 610-758-8810. This topic for this evening came from a listener who said and asked the question, what is a financial advisor? So from that, I've put together a show. I appreciate listeners bringing questions to me because I need to know what we need to discuss on the show. This is local, community, public radio. We are here to serve the community, and I want to bring topics that are interesting for those in our listening audience in particular, because I do know that the WDIY listening audience is an informed audience for sure, and you like to be informed. So for me, it's a win-win. I get to teach and tell you about all of the important information to help you in your financial life and your financial decisions. So tonight we are talking about designations. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can call live, on air, or off air, whatever works for you if you are so interested. Now, an enrolled agent. Let's talk about what an EA is. And sometimes we see just EA, but it is an enrolled agent, and they are a person who has earned the privilege of representing taxpayers before the Internal Revenue Service by either passing a three-part comprehensive IRS test covering individual and business tax returns, or through experience as a former IRS employee. You see that sometimes, people advertising former IRS employee. Enrolled agent status is the highest credential the IRS awards. Individuals who obtain this elite status must adhere to ethical standards and complete 72 hours of continuing education courses every 3 years. So remember, I mentioned the CPA has to have 80 hours of continuing education over 2 years. Regardless, any of the designations, the enrolled agent, the CPA and an attorney can all represent individuals in front of the IRS. So if you have an audit, your next door neighbor who prepares tax returns, if they don't have a CPA, EA, or an attorney, will not be able to represent you in front of the IRS. So a CPA, EA, and attorney are eligible to do that. A PFS is a personal financial specialist. This was a program, I believe it came out of the AICPA, but it's a program which allows CPAs to demonstrate their knowledge and expertise in personal financial planning. Whether a CPA specializes in personal knowledge, or excuse me, personal financial planning with their clients or interacts with other financial planning professionals, the CPA/PFS credentials adds credibility. CPA PFS credential holders have a specific experience, education, and exam requirement that sets them apart from other CPAs and financial planners. So in this example, and this probably came from, I don't know if there was a PFS website. I'm not sure where I got that definition. But what that is trying to differentiate is, in our example earlier where we were talking about CFPs, and the CFP board says everybody can say they're a financial planner, but only people who have gone through the requirements for the from the CFP board can say they are a CFP professional. The PFS, the personal financial specialist, you have to be a CPA in order to do that. And then you have to represent or show that you have certain specific knowledge around personal financial planning. Because here's the thing, it's a very nice compliment in financial planning to have that background of a CPA simply because of the tax and the planning that goes along with that. It's a very similar set of skills you need for financial planning. So the PFS is also saying that they are set apart from other financial planners as well because it is a specific designation requiring specific experience, education, etc., versus someone who just says they're a financial planner and we don't really know what education, experience, or designations or credentials they have. Now, we have more designations that we sometimes see in the financial planning world when someone says they're a financial advisor. It might not just be a CFP or a PFS. You might have a CLU or a CHFC. So the mark CLU and CHFC are the property of the American College and may only be used by individuals who successfully completed the initial and ongoing certification requirements for these designations. And you can find more information about that on their website, theamericancollege.edu. That's theamericancollege.edu. So what do these designations mean? What do they stand for? CLU is a chartered life underwriter. And I'm going to mention at the same time, the CHFC is a chartered financial consultant. And these designations kind of were born out of the insurance industry. Typically, that's where we see more of these designations. So for 87 years, the CLU has been the respected risk management credential for advisors. Designees have completed 8 or more college-level courses, representing an average study time of 400 hours. Topics for required courses include insurance and financial planning, life insurance law, estate planning, and planning for business owners and professionals. Elective courses include such advanced topics as income taxes, group benefits, retirement planning, and health insurance. CLU designees must meet the experience and continuing education requirements, and it must adhere to a high level of ethical standard. The mark is awarded by the American College, a nonprofit educator with the top level of academic accreditation. And you do hear that quite often. You'll hear people say, oh, I got this through the American College. Now, the CHFC, again, the Chartered Financial Consultant, has been a mark of excellence for almost 30 years and currently requires 9 college-level courses, the most of any financial planning credential, I would say, other than maybe now the CFP, because now the CFP requires that you have a college degree. Average, and the CPA, you have to have a college degree as well. Average study time to earn the CHFC exceeds 450 hours. Required courses cover extensive education and application training in financial planning, income taxation, investments, and estate and retirement planning. Additional electives are chosen from such topics as microeconomics, financial decisions for retirement, and executive compensation. They also must meet experience requirements and adhere to continued education and ethical standards. That is also from the American College. Now, from Investopedia, I found it said the CHFC designation has the same requirements as the CLU, except that it tends to embrace general financial planning issues as opposed to the CLU, which focuses more closely on life insurance and its laws and regulation. There is no comprehensive board exam required for either credential. Okay, I think that was to differentiate the board exam for, you know, the CPA and the CFP. CFA is Chartered Financial Analyst. Now, we probably don't see this as often with financial planning, financial advisors. Quite often, we think about the CFA, which is, again, Chartered Financial Analyst. We see that relating more to investments, and that's because it is a professional credential offered internationally by the American-based CFA Institute, formerly the Association for Investment Management and Research. It's awarded to investment and financial professionals. A candidate who successfully completes the program and meets other professional requirements is awarded the CFA charter and becomes a CFA charter holder. So the CFA charter is a professional credential. It is not an academic degree. And the concept behind it, as well as the method by which candidates are being examined, is very different from other postgraduate qualifications, especially the master's or PhD degrees typically offered by universities. And according to The Economist magazine, whereas there are tens of thousands of finance degrees available around the world, ranging from the excellent to the worthless, there is only one CFA managed and examined by an American Association of Financial Professionals, the CFA Institute. Now, the CFA program, it is a difficult program. It's very rigorous. There's several levels. It typically takes 4 years. You have 3 exams. They take about 6 months of preparation for each of the exams. You have to complete them chronologically, and you have to also have about 4 years worth of work experience. And successful candidates, again, take an average of 4 years to complete the program. What we, again, see that designation used more for is for, like, investment work. So you're going to see more CFAs on Wall Street, working on Wall Street, working for investment firms, not necessarily doing financial planning. But you occasionally will see that. And sometimes you'll see people who have multiple designations. They might have the CPA CFP. They might have the CFP CFA, CPA CFA, EA, all different kinds of combinations. And there are reasons sometimes for that. And sometimes it just depends on when someone has, advanced in their career or decided to go in a different direction, so they get additional designations. We also have, I'm going to mention just because I happen to be, one is the AEP, which is the Accredited Estate Planner, and that is a designation from the NAEPC, which is the National Association of Estate Planning Councils, and it's a graduate-level specialization in estate planning obtained in addition to already recognized professional credentials within the various disciplines of estate planning. It is awarded by the National Association of Estate Planners and Councils to recognize estate planning professionals who meet stringent requirements of experience, knowledge, education, professional reputation, and character. So, again, many organizations out there or certain fields of study will have organizations, professional organizations, schools, colleges who may encourage various designations to promote certain pieces of the financial planning process. Some, you know, may be better than others. You could argue some may not be any better than others, but it's all about being informed, making sure that whomever you may be working with, if they have credentials, what are they, do they apply, and does it make sense for you to use someone who's credentialed or not, may not make a difference. We are coming close to a break, so I also want to talk about Series 7, because you'll hear people say they have a Series 7, so I briefly want to talk about what that is, because some people who say they're financial advisors have that designation, so I want to tell you what that is. And then I want to round out the show by talking about, you know, the financial planning process and how that works and where it might make a difference in your life. If you have questions, we still have plenty of time. The phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
And you are listening to WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music. Lehigh Valley weather, current conditions, 62 degrees with overcast and haze. Tonight, slight chance of showers, lows around 61. Thursday, cloudy skies, highs around 65. And Friday, chance of thunderstorms with highs around 74 degrees. The time now is 6:45 p.m. Now back to your financial choices with our host, Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Jeff. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We are talking about various designations and what does it mean to be a financial advisor. So I open the show talking about these designations, spending quite a bit of time about talking about them because there are so many. There are so many designations. So hopefully we can kind of wrap up the show talking about putting that all together. But if you do have questions, the number is 610-758-8810. And I want to mention that next week as well, the show will be listeners' questions. So if you have any, you can send them through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, or call in next week, either on live, on air, or off air, whatever you are most comfortable with. And it will be the same phone number next week as well. So I want to round out talking about designations, also mentioning the Series 7. The Series 7 is basically an exam. Individuals who want to enter the securities industry to sell any type of securities must take the Series 7 exam, formerly known as the General Securities Representative Examination. Individuals who pass the Series 7 are eligible to register with all self-regulatory organizations to do trades. The Financial Industry Regulatory Authority is FINRA. They administer the Series 7 exam. And FINRA used to be NASD, I think. So years fly by. They changed the name, but it is FINRA now. And Series 7 allows people to do trades selling, you know, brokers, basically. You have to have the Series 7. So you will find folks who don't have the Series 7 but still can trade for you and do transactions, and they may have other licensing like a Series 6, which they may do through a registered investment advisor, and it's a little bit different authorities for that. So, or different applications for that. Those aren't designations. That is simply a licensing. Okay. So because someone has a Series 7 and can execute trades for you does not necessarily mean that they are a financial advisor. Now, someone may say they're a financial advisor with that designation and give you financial advice it's just not in the realm or under the other authorities that I mentioned earlier for the various designations. So when we talk about what a financial advisor is, go in informed, making sure that you understand who you're working with and where it's applicable. For example, if you're someone who might just need tax help, maybe it's important for you to work with a CPA. Maybe you're someone who's going in and just getting some help with some insurance dilemma. It might help you to work with someone who's a CLU. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that your insurance agent has to be a CLU when you're going to buy your homeowner's policy or your auto policy. So you want to make sure you understand the application of these designations and where it makes sense to you if you are working with someone who has those other credentials and requirements, okay? So I'm not saying you necessarily have to call up your homeowner's agent and say, oh, do you have a CLU? I don't want to work with you anymore. No, it's not necessarily that works like that. We want you to be informed. What we're talking about tonight is if you are looking for a financial advisor, just trying to make sure you understand who it is you're working with and their credentials, and if that makes a difference in the analysis or planning that you need done for yourself. Okay. Folks, again, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So when you do go to work with a financial advisor, there may be times where you want to work with someone who will do a comprehensive plan for you. That may be a certified financial planner professional. It may be a PFS, which was the I have to look that up, the PFS, because I never can remember that one. The personal financial specialist, which is someone who's also a CPA. So you may be having a comprehensive plan. Basically, what you want to make sure someone is going through with you is the financial planning process. Whether or not they're a CFP, there's a lot of credibility to that process, which is the initial introductory meeting. Then you have, you know, at that introductory meeting, you set out your goals, your questions. Is this someone that you can work with? Can they help you? Can they answer your questions? Do they have the background to answer your questions? What are they going to give you? Are they going to give you an analysis? Are they going to give you a financial plan? What does that look like? So you find that out in the introductory meeting. Then you do fact finding, provide all the information that they need to do their analysis. You know, if folks come in and say, can you help me, you know, retire at age 60 and I want to have $100,000 a year to live on, and the people haven't saved a penny and they don't have any future income stream. Well, no one can just make that happen with, you know, telling you. You have to provide the documents, the background information. What are your goals? What are you going to need to do? And are you going to be able to implement some of the goals? And even then, will it make a difference? Okay. So we go through a fact finding, then there's data analysis. So your financial advisor is going to analyze the information that you've given them. You have to be forthcoming with everything, really open. You have to make sure you're working with someone that you trust and that you are willing to share that information with. And then from the data analysis, they will provide recommendations. And hopefully with those recommendations, if you implement, you can get on track, do the right things, tweak this, tweak that, make sure that you know what you can do to accomplish those goals. Maybe you have to work more, work longer, work more jobs, or cut your expenses. So that financial advisor should give you some recommendations that you can then implement, and then you monitor them over time to see if you're still on track. And you should periodically check that plan and make sure that you're implementing as suggested, because if you think you have a plan, someone's giving you the plan, it doesn't mean anything unless you actually go do and take care of some of those steps that have been discussed. So, for example, when we talk about financial planning, A financial advisor might say, you know, you need to look at your accounts and how you have them titled. You need to look at your beneficiary designations, your primary, your contingent. And maybe they say, you know, you need to go talk to your attorney about the proper wording for these designations. Maybe there's a trust involved for minor children. You need to take those next steps. They can't go see the attorney for you. So you go see the attorney. You have the attorney talk to you about what those designations look like. Then the attorney can't further implement them either. Again, it's going to require some action on your part. So your financial advisor says, go see the attorney. The attorney says, okay, here's how these things should be worded. Now you need to go talk to the custodians and make sure that you have all the proper designations on your accounts. So that's just an example of what a financial advisor might go through with you in looking at planning. They give you recommendations that implementation, either in conjunction with them, encouraged by them, but in the end, actually action on your part, because no one can sign those beneficiary designation forms but you. So you want to make sure that you're doing everything. If you've agreed with the recommendations, you want to make sure you follow through with those. Okay, so financial advisors able to hopefully help you go through, you know, whatever goals and dreams you have, fulfilling them, making sure you're on track, making sure that you're working with a financial advisor who can help you accomplish your financial goals. All right. So with that, we're kind of wrapping up the end of the show. I have a few minutes left. I just want to mention again that I was very excited about the series of shows I had on how the elements of financial planning fit into every stage of your life. This is exactly what it should be employed when you're talking about working with financial advisors, is how different financial planning strategies impact your life at different and various stages, and how it can help you, it can help your children, it can help your parents, it can help grandparents. If you understand the elements of financial planning and being proactive about implementing strategies that help you meet your goals in the long term, and it's about being proactive. So again, the elements of financial planning are your cash flow, your taxes, your investments, retirement, risk management, which is insurance, and estate planning. And of course, there are additional elements within those, but those are the main ones. And taking each of those elements of financial planning and understanding the impact they have on you at each stage of your life, whether you're young, just out of college, whether you're in that nesting stage where now you have responsibilities and you have to be more concerned with insurance and risk management, to the point where now we have investments. What do we need to look at when we're investing? How does that apply depending on how old we are? What are the tax ramifications of the decisions we're making, whether we put money into 401ks, whether we put money into a Roth IRA? What is the impact of that, not just from a tax perspective, but from an investment perspective, to a cash flow perspective, and then to eventually that impacting our retirement? And from there, is there going to be something left for our heirs, which is your estate planning? Okay, so that's the whole gamut of financial planning elements, how they impact the various stages of our life. You can find those topics on the podcast on wdiy.org or through yourfinancialchoices.com. And the podcasts are available. You can download them and listen to them at your leisure. They are not necessarily in order, so you find the ones that are most interesting to you. But on top of that, it's not just that series that's available. We have lots of other topics that are available for people to listen to. And I'm happy to have additional topics that you can also share your questions with me and your interest of what you'd like to see on the air coming in the future. So I'm happy to do topics that will impact you. Next week's show will be listeners' questions, and we can take those live on air or off air next week or through the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Submit a question, and I'll be happy to answer that next week. I'll review questions that we've had come in over the past several months and kind of follow up on some of those. Maybe your question was posed in the past, and I'll be covering that again, giving you some additional information. And I guess that's it. So I want to thank everyone for listening tonight. The phone number, gosh, I'm so tired. Folks, Lori's been battling some little back pain, but doing better tonight. But thank you, Jeff, for being here. Thank you, Judy Ann, for being here. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Albert, for calling in earlier tonight. I appreciate it. Stay tuned for In the Tradition Folk Music with Tom Druckenmiller. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.